Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host of this podcast and as the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement. Today, I have one of my very favorite people on the podcast with me today, and I will be introducing her in just a moment. I do want to add a very quick reminder that there is a viewer discretion is advised on this podcast due to the sensitive nature of the topics that we will be discussing. Gwen's country music is the dominating double-fisted kind and not afraid to make light of a serious subject. Her songs are well written, never so message-driven as to be preachy and radical. Gwen delivers with sophistication and not with a temper, but she does draw attention. That is a quote from Americana Highways on Gwen Libby and the Breakdown website. From a very young age, Gwen was musically, dramatically, and visually gifted. Her 2023 hit, Barefoot and Pregnant, set the tone for the vivacious singer-songwriter's career. Her music video blends country and pop music elements with joyous satire, combining songs with messages that can be fun and do matter. It went viral, garnering 20 million views to date across her YouTube channel, various social media platforms, and even reaching CMT Australia. Gwen's music and songwriting come from the real world. They are broadly appealing and agilely cross over boundaries. In 2022, Roe v. Wade was overturned after years of being a cornerstone of women's rights. Barefoot and Pregnant was born, an easy write with fire and passion pouring out of her and her co-writers, Will and Sherry. So, without further ado, I would love to bring Gwen to introduce herself to anybody who is listening. Gwen, the floor is yours. Feel free to introduce yourself. And my first question to you is, what inspired you to write Barefoot and Pregnant? Walk us through the creativeness of it. Write us through the songwriting process, writing through, finding the beat, finding the melody. Walk us through all of that and just share with the world who Gwen is.
Well, hello everybody. I'm Gwen Levy, and I am not only a singer-songwriter, I'm also honored to be a co-founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement and to be here doing all this incredible work with the Rise Above Justice Movement. I would say Barefoot and Pregnant is what led us to each other. I am a survivor, as if you're listening to our podcast, you might already know. And I'm a survivor of both childhood and adult sexual assault. And I just couldn't not write Barefoot and Pregnant. I remember exactly where I was when Roe v. Wade was overturned. I was sitting working in this small little rock and roll boutique store here in Nashville. And I think my world just it just stunned me. I think it stunned a lot of us. A lot of us didn't see it coming. Clearly things were done to keep us, uninformed about what was going on. So when the Dobbs decision was reached, I was sitting there thinking about all the little girls and all the women like myself who are survivors that, now don't have the choice, don't have the right to decide what happens to their own bodies at all times. Whether you're a survivor or not, that is obviously a human rights issue. And I couldn't not speak out at that time. I had some success in the mainstream country music world. My first single did really well. It went up to some of the big Nashville songwriter playlists on Spotify, Apple Music, and as an independent artist, that's very rare. So, I had some traction. And I didn't really blink when it came to writing the song. I had told my co-writers, hey, I really need to write about this issue. And their names are Will Rambo and Sheree Austin. And they were like, well, we have this idea. It's called Barefoot and Pregnant. And we think it's perfect for you and, perfect for what I want to say. So we got in the room. And I always say it was kind of like magic. And a lot of the best songs come out really fast. And Barefoot and Pregnant was definitely one of them. So there was definitely that magic that was created in the writing room that day. And from there, it was really my choice. and no pun intended, but it was my choice to put out this music, to put out the song. I didn't care if it was risky. I just knew I had to get it out there. And obviously, with the music video being such an important part of bringing that message alive of Barefoot and Pregnant, I, pulled out all the stops, and it was all DIY. All the people you see in the music video are my family or are my friends, and the sets were designed by my parents. And I helped produce that music video, and it's just a very small a film company who are my dear friends, Stormlight Pictures, that helped put that together as well. And when w the day that we filmed that music video, Michael Beckham is one of the co-producers of the music video, and he wrote on email and said, "This is an anthem for our times, and it's so important. And every single person that's been a part of Barefoot and Pregnant understands the importance of the message and getting it out there." And it's really changed my life, but really, I wanted to get out there even more to help people, because I have had people that are conservative come up to me and say, "This song made me rethink the way I have always been taught and the way I've thought about reproductive rights and abortion, the way I view women." And it just, that is really what I've always wanted with the song, and to give people some hope during this very dark time. And I think it's a good thing that it is satire, that it's disarming, because when people first hear it, they're not immediately turned off to it. And I'm just really grateful for the way it's been received. Even though, of course, sadly, I wish I'd never had to write about this issue in the first place, but here we are in 2025. And obviously, living in Tennessee, we have one of the worst abortion bans in the whole state, where, if you're a survivor of rape, incest, it doesn't matter if you're a child, like you have to be for you're forced to carry that pregnancy to term against your will. And as we're seeing in Georgia, just a state over, women's bodies are literally being used as incubators even after they have been declared legally dead. So these are very scary times, and I just know that as a survivor, my voice was taken away, and this is the way I've re-empowered myself and taken my voice back and been the girl with the voice that is trying to give one to those that don't have one. So that's really how Barefoot and Pregnant was born.
Absolutely. Gwen, thank you so much for, sharing your story and being candid in your music. And speaking of which, I want to talk really quickly about a quote that you stated in Bust, which, by the way, for those who do not know, Gwen was named as one of the five female artists you should be listening to right now. And one of the quotes that you shared, Gwen, whenever you were asked about female musicians that have inspired you, you replied, "Linda Ronstadt is a big influence for me as a trailblazer, not only in music, but also in her existence as a woman changing the status quo as the first female rock and roll star. She did all of this while standing up for her Mexican heritage when she was told throughout her career to hide it. As an openly bisexual, pro-choice woman with Jewish heritage, in an interracial relationship, I too have been told throughout my career to hide these parts of myself. But having the ability to openly be who I am is important to me. And it's artists like Linda who showed me that's possible." That is one of the most deepest and inspirational quotes that I've personally read in a very long time. Do you want to walk us through a little bit about what exactly it is with Linda that inspired you? And then let's talk about some of your other musical inspirations, because I've talked to you a little bit about, like Stevie Nicks, and then a little bit of like Joni Mancina, and some of these like big time musicians. Walk us through your songwriting career from where you began to where you are now. And then you also have a new EP coming out. You also have a new song releasing on August 29th. Let's talk about that a little bit too. But first, let's talk about that songwriting experience. Walk us through what it was like for you to write your first song, walk us through the process, where you were at that time, and then we will kind of fast forward to today and talk a little bit about the inspiration behind some of your other music, and just kind of go back and forth. And I think just really highlighting this kind of shows the person behind the name. You have a very strong social media presence, which you've helped Rise Above Justice Movement grow, but you've also helped your own personal brand grow as well. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But walk us through your songwriting experience. What was it like growing up for you, and what got you into songwriting?
So I started writing songs when I was 5 years old. So I always had it in me, and I'm an only child. So I grew up finding ways to entertain myself when I didn't have friends over. And my parents, even though they're not musicians themselves, they love music and they had music playing throughout the house, growing up all the time and different kinds of music. And I was a kid that, while other kids were out partying or looking for something to do on a Saturday night, I was inside writing songs. My parents would let me set up in our living room and they would go to bed and I would still be, playing with my loop pedal, writing songs, practicing guitar, singing, till, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was. And so I had really supportive parents, and I'm really grateful for that because they really helped foster that creativity. So with that, I was always told that to be a serious songwriter, Nashville is the place for that. And when I graduated college in 2017, I had a theater degree and I was still pursuing music throughout this time. So I was like, oh, either I'll go to New York City or I'll move to Nashville. And I ended up choosing Nashville, and it was the best decision for me. There's been so many opportunities here. Even though we are in a deep red state, I still feel like this is the place to find out if you're meant to do this. And, I'm testing myself, and it's very competitive, and there's a lot of amazing songwriters here, but that just makes me better. And I am so grateful that I did get to sign an artist development deal and work with Will Rambeau and Sheree Austin. And they really gave me the tools I needed to write these big songs. And before that, when I first moved to Nashville as well, I was also I was accepted into the Judy Stakey songwriting retreat. And Judy Stakey, she discovered a lot of big songwriters, Sheryl Crow, she discovered Jewel, she discovered Katy Perry, Michelle Branch, who I love Michelle Branch too. People, and Sheryl Crow and Michelle Branch were two of my biggest inspirations. So I was really honored because when I went to that songwriting workshop, I just moved to Nashville. I was a baby. I was very overwhelmed by all the talent here. And I was like, oh, maybe I won't even do the artist thing. Maybe I'll just be a songwriter, and try to get a publishing deal. And, that quickly changed into, no, I'm meant to do this artist thing. And Judy Stakey was part of that as well. She told me, you're a great Nashville songwriter. She loved my songs. She loved my voice. And that really gave me a lot of encouragement to continue down this career path. And what was the other part of your question?
So the other part of the question, essentially, and you kind of hit on a little bit, but what is it specifically about female songwriting that kind of sets the tone and sets that standard? What is it like being a female, being openly bisexual in country music? Talk about that a little bit, because there's been other artists that are as well. What have you seen with that? What have you been told? And, for those of you who follow Rise for Justice Movement on social media, you will also note that we collaborate with Gwen on her personal profile, and then also on Gwen Levy and the Broke Gwen Levy and the Breakdown. Sorry, Gwen.
That's okay. Gwen loving the broke down.
I mean, yes, I
Yeah, I
mean,
mean, yeah, for real.
you know what? I'm not gonna edit that out either. I'm gonna leave it. I'm gonna let it sit. All of
Absolutely
this is
keep
gonna be
it.
on this podcast, and it just shows the goofy side of us too, because in all honesty, doing this work, it gets very heavy. It gets very deep. And we talk about these subjects over and over and over again. And we'll be talking with survivors and organizations and leaders who are on the ground, doing this work, and also, trying to crack some cases too, because I'm talking to a couple families that have had their loved ones go missing and they haven't been seen in decades. They haven't been heard from in decades, and there's no new leads. These are cold case files that the mainstream media, typically doesn't cover. So these are stories and experiences of real life people across the globe that I'll be talking to. And, Gwen, you'll be joining me, and there'll be my other co-founders. And I think just the inspiration behind all of it is really just, tackling those journalistic failures whenever it comes to the mainstream media and not covering a lot of these stories. And so, Gwen, talk a little bit about, kind of like what we mentioned a little bit ago about being a female, being openly bisexual, and being in songwriting. What have you seen? What have you heard? Where are you headed?
Absolutely. So I know you had mentioned about, female songwriters and how much they've inspired me. They've inspired me tremendously. And the thing about female representation in music, and it's not just country music, even though the numbers are really low in country music, but females in music have often been underrepresented compared to, male songwriters and artists. In country music, for example, I think maybe a little over 3% of the music you hear on country radio are women. That is embarrassingly low. And I'm someone that I follow Change the Conversations. Leslie Fram, who was the head of CMT for a long time and just left. We have I've met her, we have a connection. And she's really trying to literally change that conversation, especially in country music, with the way that women are underrepresented. And I always say, going to country music, I grew up on so many different kinds of music, and I grew up in one of the most diverse areas in the country. It's called Alexandria, Virginia. It's right outside of Washington, D.C. And I went to school with children from all over the, all over the world. So I was very influenced by different music from all over the world as well. And country music, my parents didn't really listen to traditional country music. I mean, we loved Patsy Cline and, some of the great voices. There were some great Willie Nelson songs. And but when it came to mainstream country, I really didn't get introduced to mainstream country until The Chicks. And I remember their album, I think it was their greatest hits. And my best friend growing up, she had the CD, and I just loved their sound, what they stood for, their messages. I mean, it was very obviously very female centric, and feminist in its own way. And it was so cool. So that led me to, Shania Twain, who obviously is a female artist in country music who moved the boundaries. Like the boundaries were one place, and she just pushed those aside because that's really, she was like a trailblazer as well. And Linda Ronstadt is someone who, obviously, I love her voice, and I was very much influenced by her voice. I was told growing up that I looked like her, so I was like very much like, oh, I want to listen to her. And of course, I fell in love with her music and what she also stood for. And she was also politically outspoken, which was really cool for the time period she was in the 70s and the 80s. And Linda Ronstadt is somebody who sang all different genres of music. And that's really because she diversified, she reached so many different audiences. And I know we say I'm a country music artist, but I like Zachary, we had this conversation the other day. I'm really an independent artist, and I can fall into my music can fall into many different genres, especially with this new EP that's coming out called Lighter on October 24th. And actually, as the podcast airs on August 29th, the single Lighter will come out, and it's folk, it's Americana, it's country, and my EP is, rock, it's pop, it has all these different influences. There's soul, and I'm singing in a way that's my own voice, and I feel like this EP also shows off all the different like the range of songs that I can sing. And that's really what Linda Ronstadt did, while also being a trailblazer in her identity. For a long time, Linda Ronstadt was told she could not speak about her Mexican heritage. Ronstadt doesn't sound Mexican, it's German. So a lot of people just thought, oh, she's just, she's white, But she, like mo a lot of us in America, we are very diverse, and we're, we come from immigrants. Our families are, a lot of us are immigrants. And I mean, unless you're Native American, you are an immigrant. And so when she did come out about being Mexican, I know she lost a lot of fans. And that's just pure racism, right? And so with me, especially in country music, you're always told, don't come out that you're in the LGBTQ plus community. It was controversial that I have a Jewish last name. At one point, it was discussed to take off my last name and just go as Gwen. And so we're told all these things about our identity that we're told to hide because it's going to turn some people off. But aren't we always told as artists that being authentic is the most important thing to be? So I'm always like, I feel much more comfortable in my skin. I feel more empowered saying who I am. And I know not everybody's going to feel that way. I don't expect everyone who is bisexual or gay or lesbian, or trans in the country music community or any part of the music community to come out. It has to be your decision. But for me, it was just re-empowering. And, all goes leads back to being a survivor. And having my voice stifled for so long really did a number on me. And now I just, as long as I'm not hurting anybody, and I'm sure, people might get hurt, their feelings might get hurt by Barefoot and Pregnant, but I'm not trying to hurt anybody. I'm trying to bring awareness to this issue. And it honestly, if that song offends you, then there's something deep within you that you also need to reflect on, is also what I think too. And I as a bisexual woman, whenever I put up something about celebrating the LGBTQ plus community, I get, I lose followers, I get more hate. So there's all these things that make my existence my resistance. And that's a quote from a song called Shut Up that's coming out next year. But my existence is resistance, because literally everything you said, from being, openly pro-choice woman to being bisexual to have being in an interracial relationship, we got a lot of hate for being in an interracial relationship. Just, and also having Jewish heritage, all these things, and German also, which is kind of, some people would say that's a juxtaposition, but that is the way of the world, right? We are all a melting pot. We're all a mix of a lot of different things. And diversity is great. So I'm not going to stop using my voice and telling my truth, because I guess that's what makes me a bold storyteller, is that I'm not going to be told what to do and what to say. And that's also a benefit of being an independent artist, is that you can say what you want to say. You don't have a label telling you what to say or what you can't say. For a long time, I had a team and I wasn't allowed to say, be exactly who I wanted to be and say exactly what I wanted to say. But, I think with Lighter, this EP coming out, it's that branching off from, being stifled. And now it's like I can spread my wings and fly, and I'm finding my wings again, which is really what it's about. So it's all about being lighter. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit very hard on some very sensitive subjects. So I admire a lot what you say and what you do. I mean, practically everything you do is beyond incredible. You know, I've known you for over the last year, and watching you grow as an independent artist, but also watching you as a storyteller, as a visionary, and you know, turning your rage into passion and turning that passion into viral hits, you know, like Barefoot and Pregnant. And one of the other songs I wanted to talk about is One Love Wiser. And in the lyrics, you know, it starts off and you can tell, like, okay, this is gonna be just another one of those sappy music songs, right? But this is so much more than that. You know, and whenever I first heard it, I was like, okay, this is deeply incredible. And because it's so lyrically put together, and you know, it starts off with your verse of he walks through the inn door as you're walking out. You can almost hear your young heart when it shouts, he's the one, there's no doubt. You're telling your friends all about how he kisses you, how he misses you when you're not around. And then you keep going in. And you keep talking, and then you're a different girl now. You'll never be the same. It's a whole new world now. Yeah, everything has changed. All the games people play seems like a waste of time these days. You might be hurting, but you're still searching for a love that's gonna stay. Can you talk about that? Because that is like a lyrically put together genius masterpiece. Can you talk about that a little bit and what was the inspiration behind One Love Wiser?
Thank you. So I never even saw One Love Wiser as a Survivor song until you brought that up, Zachary. And but I love that it is because there's so much in there that can be interpreted as a Survivor. And you know, it's all about like this like loss of innocence, but also embracing who you are because you're growing and developing as a person. And when I wrote One Love Wiser, I moved to Nashville in 2017, and I was supposed to move here with my first boyfriend. And, you know, I will say he was like the healthiest love that was in my life until Marcus, my partner now. And he treated me well, but it just wasn't the right fit for me. And so we were going to move here out of college, and he was literally just moving to Nashville for me. There was nothing really here that I think he wanted. Like, I think it was a very big adjustment. He would have moved away from his family. So I think it was maybe a few days before we were supposed to move. We had the U-Haul all packed up, and we already had a lease out here in Nashville. You know, we broke up, and it was heartbreaking, and I know like he really wanted to marry me, and I just wasn't in that mindset. And I'm glad I made the decision a week later after that to still move to Nashville and persevere without, you know, being in that relationship, because I learned so much. And coming down here, and I've really never talked about it, but being a survivor, leaving that first relationship, and really that was my, you know, I didn't really have my college experience until I moved to Nashville, I always say, because I really didn't start dating a lot of people till moving here. And I was really in a lot of toxic situations. And the more I'm realizing and going to therapy about the trauma that happened to me, not only when I was 6 years old, but when I was older in Nashville, when I was assaulted multiple times by different partners here, I'm realizing that, you know, you do become one love wiser with every person. But for me as a survivor, until I could get that therapy work, until I could address what had happened to me, I was repeating, like my assaults were repeating. And not to say the assaults were my fault, but I know that I was not taking care of myself. Like I wasn't appreciating myself. I didn't love myself. I also felt guilty that, you know, I did break up with my first boyfriend. And just, I think as a survivor too, you become so sensitive and an empath. And the idea of hurting someone else really hurts you. And we can go into all of this when you're ready, Zachary, but all of this to say, not having that self-esteem because of what happened to me put me in these very vulnerable situations, not being able to stand up for myself, even though they weren't my faults. And I think One Love Wiser, when I hear it, it not only is a beautiful song for me, but it's just like it takes me back to that time where I'm learning so much. Like it's almost like the naivete of being a young person, a young woman in this world, navigating, the dating life in a brand new city. It brings me back to that. And then also, what lies there for you on the other side? Because if I hadn't had all these experiences, I know they wouldn't have led me to Marcus, someone who we've been together almost 4 years and, is the love of my life and is such like the healthiest love I've ever had. He's loved me through all of my therapy work that I'm going through right now. He's loved me no matter what size I am, because I'm also recovering from an eating disorder that I've had my whole life because of my, learning now that it's really, really deeply tied to my assault that happened to me when I was 6 years old. So that's really what One Love Wiser, in a very long way, to in a very long way to put it, it's about, whatever the things that lead you to that person that's going to be that healthy love. And you may not, I know not everyone has the same experience in life, and not everyone's going to find healthy love, even though I would think that, I mean, everyone deserves healthy love. Let me just say that everybody deserves it. And yeah, I hope people listen to that song and feel hope.
Well, I can say from a survivor standpoint that I absolutely felt hope. And I felt the lyrics behind it. I felt the words behind it. And I want to shift really quickly. And I know your aunt had a really big influence on you, your aunt Leah. And you mentioned that Leah was an aid worker who served in South Sudan and visited refugee camps in Afghanistan, where she provided aid to women and children. You did visit your aunt in the Middle East when you were 15 and was inspired by her humanitarian work. Can you talk a little bit about your aunt and, kind of what led you to also finding your voice in like the advocacy sphere too? Because, I first learned about you because there was an article that kind of went viral with you in Tennessee, where you, I believe you performed barefoot and pregnant in front of a giant IUD. Can you talk a little bit about your advocacy outside of your music, but also how it connects to your music and it connects you to different people, like myself, and then, other advocates and leaders and organizations across the country too. Can you talk a little bit about your aunt and what led you into like the advocacy work side of it?
Yeah, so my Aunt Leah was an amazing person. She was a trailblazer in her own way, definitely. Gosh, she worked for the World Bank, so she lived all over the world, my whole life. I remember she was living in London, or living in Cambodia or Kazakhstan, and she lived in Afghanistan for a long time, in Kabul. And I actually had the honor of visiting her when I was 15. In the Middle East. And that experience changed my life. As a 50-year-old, 50-year-old, as a 15-year-old young woman, visiting that part of the world opened my eyes, because, I know that it's been this way, but, obviously, especially now, we're told to hate people that come from the Middle East or other parts of the world. And I had already been exposed to a lot of diversity, as I said, because I grew up in one of the most diverse areas of the country. But seeing that part of the world, seeing what connects us to each other and how alike we really are at the heart of everything as humans living this human experience, just really affected me in so many ways. So My aunt gave me that gift, and she gave me that gift in so many ways because she was inspiring to me. She was working, trying to help these governments repair themselves. And while doing that, she was a little rebellious herself. She would, they would live in the government compounds in these areas of the world, and my aunt would sneak out. And, I remember in Afghanistan, she had to wear a bulletproof vest. Because obviously it was very dangerous and continues to be very unfortunately. But she would sneak out and visit the refugee camps there and literally give the coat off her back to people. She would visit the women's shelters that were in the surrounding areas. She was just such a generous person. She kept a lot of people. She paid a lot of people during the pandemic. To keep them going, even though they weren't able to, provide services for her. She was that kind of person, and she inspired me to see life in that way and to be generous. And I think we live in this culture right now that almost it showcases being selfish and tries to say that that's a good thing. But my aunt lived her life the opposite way. She just wanted to help the world. And she was someone who was a woman who was unmarried. She was childless, but she was so fulfilled in life. And she had this spark. And you can see, like, when we all came together, when she passed away, very tragically in 2022 during a diving accident. There's so many people from all over the world that remembered her and wanted to remember her and talked about how much of an impact she had in their lives. And, all the people said, everyone's always said she just helped so many people. No one could do what she did, and how much of a loss it was to lose her. And that was my aunt. And I come from a family of very independent, unconventional women, and they all were feminists, like living their own life. My grandma immigrated from Germany during World War II. She grew up during the war. She saw horrific things that happened during World War II, and was an immigrant, and she faced a lot of the hate that we see today. And she was German, just because she had an accent, right? People were very discriminatory towards her. And so my aunt, my grandpa on that side as well, he worked, they met during the war. So it was a forbidden love because he was an American soldier and she was, a German citizen. And they weren't supposed to fall in love, but they did. And my grandfather ended up working for the DIA, which is, the Defense Intelligence Agency. So he was also traveling the world, and my mom's family was moving around all the time. And that includes my aunt Leah, because she was my mom's younger sister. So they also, my family on that side saw the world. And they also cared so much about what was happening in the world. And I think having that instilled in me, and obviously it was instilled in my Aunt Leah, was a very unconventional way of viewing things, especially as we're seeing in the society where wealth is like, oh, that's what everybody wants. Like money is like the end all, right? But that's not the way my family grew up and how I was taught to live. And I'm grateful for that because I wouldn't want to live any other way. And it makes this work all the more important, to see the world and know that it's not all about you, right? We're not like a, it's not just about me, myself, and I. There's other people living with among us, that are trying to live their lives and have this human experience. And where we could be helping people, unfortunately, we're not. But I hope that changes. And that's why I'm also really honored to be part of Rise Above Justice Movement, because that's what we do, right? We want to bring awareness to these issues that the mainstream media won't cover, and the stories of survivors. Because at the end of the day, we're all survivors of this administration, of what's happening in the world. And I just think that survivors care, and we want to get things done. And I know my aunt was a survivor in her own way. Yeah, just an amazing person, and I miss her every single day.
You know, Gwen, I think she would be very impressed with what you're doing now and that you're keeping the spirit alive. You know, and I based on what I know about your aunt, I see that a lot. And I see a lot of what you described of her, I also see in you. And you can tell that you have a heart of gold. You can tell that you have the spirit and the helping nature to help other people get to where you are, but also help them begin their journey of that pipeline from victim to survivor, and then from activist to advocate. And those are two separate pipelines. And I want to talk a little bit about, if you're comfortable with it, I would like to talk a little bit about what you experienced at a very young age. And I, again, anybody who's listening from this point on, these subjects are very tumultuous, and there is a viewer discretion advised because of the topics that will be discussed. I want to add the disclaimer in there. Content warning, trigger warning, if you go past beyond this point, these are going to be very detailed descriptions of a lot of different acts. So, Gwen, if you are able to, can you walk us through what happened at a very young age?
So I've never talked about this specific story, and I really wanted to do this on this podcast, because it's a safe space. And I, around 6 years old, I grew up, like I said, right outside of Washington, D.C. And I had a really wonderful childhood, wonderful parents who loved me. And I'm really grateful for that. But as a lot of survivors experience, my parents entrusted me with a babysitter. And at the time, we lived on a cul-de-sac. And the babysitter was part of a family that was associated with a gang. And basically, the gang ended up wanting to take over our neighborhood. They were kind of, eventually terrorizing like the neighbors. They like slashed my dad's convertible cover at one point, just trying to scare people to leave the neighborhood so they could just move in and, take over. And I don't know if it was an initiation for them or not, but I was being watched by my babysitter and her brothers. And their friends pulled me into the bushes right outside then our house in the cul-de-sac, and they molested me. And when I look back on it, I was obviously had no idea what had happened, but I do remember when they tried to get me to do things to them, I refused. And I can't remember exactly if the babysitter came out at the time and that's what ended it. But basically they threatened me and said they would kill my family if I said anything. So I lived with this and never told anybody until my best friend in college, he killed himself. He had severe depression. And took his own life in the dorms. And, when I was intimate with my boyfriend at the time, I suddenly started getting all these flashbacks to what had happened to me. And that's the first time I saw a therapist about it. So I was probably like 21 when I actually first started to say something. And I remember maybe hinting at something to my dad at 12, but there's this like minimization that happened for me my whole life where I just didn't think it was a big deal. And I grew up thinking that something, I just grew up thinking it was normal. And as I've continued my therapy work, I went to this therapist when I was 21. I didn't really get serious about my therapy until I met Marcus, my current partner, because I felt like it was going to be a serious relationship. I felt like it was special, and I didn't want to repeat anything, any of the toxicity that had happened in my relationships previously. And we can talk about that as well, because there was abuse, unfortunately, in those relationships as well. And I just wanted to be the best partner I could be for Marcus, and started taking, like I said, taking therapy seriously. I was going once a week. I started doing brain spotting, and all of this led to this assault. And I'm still going through therapy work to this day at 30 years old, really addressing what has happened. And it really hasn't been until the past few months that brain spotting has really opened up this damaged part of my brain and made me see clearer and made me see how I've developed this eating disorder to cope with what's happened and why I've had this relationship with food. And that's it's created an addict, and someone who is so grateful to be in recovery for what has happened to me, and really the way I've been taking out this assault on myself. And that's something I know a lot of survivors go through. We are silent, we're silent in the way our wounds appear. I should say, I want to quote our friend Jess Michaels, who is an incredible person and an Epstein survivor, survivor of Sandy Hook. And she said, our wounds are invisible. And that's really how it is as a survivor. Our wounds are invisible. We're not bleeding out in a hospital bed. Instead, we're sitting there reliving something that happened to us. And for me, it was like I've been taking it out on myself, and abusing myself with food. And I'm sure at some point it was, I've overdone it on alcohol too, I'm very honest about that, but I literally am surviving. And as this is the first time I'm talking publicly about it, I just really hope it helps people. I hope it helps people to know they're not alone and that this is such a big thing, unfortunately, something that happens far, far too often. And I'm grateful to live in a generation that talks more and we have more access to therapy, even though it should be even more accessible for people, right? Because my health insurance doesn't cover my therapy, it's out of pocket. And I can only imagine for someone who doesn't have the privilege I have that can't afford this therapy work. I want that to be a mission as well, is that we can talk more about mental health and how we can help people afford these services, because they've literally saved my life. Like I've attempted suicide, as a lot of survivors have, and it's very, very painful to talk about and to relive. But like I said, I just hope that people know they're not alone. And I am in this place of just wow, like life is beautiful. And I've been very disassociated from my body my whole life, living from the neck up, just living in my head since this assault has happened to me. And it could have emotionally stunted my growth, but now I feel like I'm in a place where I am stronger and seeing things much clearer than if I if I just kind of kept covering up this wound that has been bleeding this whole time. And one of my favorite quotes is by Rita Moreno, who was in West Side Story and just an amazing Puerto Rican actress. She was raped and had to have an I believe she had to have an abortion because of her rape. And she talks about how the wound never fully heals, but it scars over. And that's really, again, how it feels to be a survivor. It's just like right now I'm bleeding. This wound is open, but I know someday it's going to scar over. It won't fully ever go away, but as I do this work on myself, I really just have a lot of hope. And that's the first time that I felt that way. So thank you for letting me share that. And for any survivors listening, yes, please just know you're not alone.
Gwen, thank you for having the candid conversation with me, and for sharing something that you, as you mentioned, you never shared publicly before. And I just have a couple more key things that I want to hit on, and then anything else that you want to share, because we're getting ready to hit the 1 hour. But there's a couple other things that I really wanted to mention. On August 3rd on your Instagram, you mentioned about it being your Uncle David's 60th birthday. And towards the very end of your caption, you stated, "Before he died, he sent me this message about barefoot and pregnant." And you also mentioned that your uncle fought stage 4 kidney cancer for 10 years, like the true fighter that he was. And the message read as followed: "Dear Gwen, congratulations on your premiere tonight. I'm sorry Carmen and I won't be able to join you. I've watched the video several times and want to tell you it is wonderful. A true anthem that is very timely. It is very brave of you to sing what's on your mind, and I'm very proud of you. I know Leah would be as well. As an artist, you owe it to yourself and others to be authentic and to sing from your heart with meaning, like you do. I wish you much success with it. And hope you have a wonderful time tonight at the premiere. Congratulations. Love, Uncle Dave." How did it feel to receive that message? And you can hear it in my voice that it definitely hits a little bit different. But it's a very real emotion whenever you hear it. How did you feel?
I did feel obviously very emotional, and it was before my uncle passed away, and I know he is a, he was also fighting this unfortunately incurable disease because it was stage 4 for so long, but he also was someone who saw the world in a very beautiful way and saw people in a wonderful way. So for him to be proud of me for putting out the song and to tell me my Aunt Leah would be proud of me, just really, really, as you said, hits really hard, and keeps me going. And when he passed away, he was also someone that brought together a lot of people, and people loved him so much. He's very charismatic and just had this lovable personality. And I think that's what my family does, is bring people together and cares about people other than themselves. And yeah, so I felt really proud in that moment to hear that. And I know at one point, he had, I think he had messaged me too or commented, because when I m the reason we got connected was because the I performed in front of the giant IUD with the Tennessee Three's Gloria Johnson and Senator Charlene Oliver here in Tennessee, and it was to bring awareness to the fact that Tennessee had not passed protections for contraception and IVF, and I don't believe my uncle got to see that we actually did get those passed. We're the only red state where the governor has signed those protections. And to be a small part of that also brings me a lot of pride. But I know he knew that we were working on that and that I had done that press conference and talked about my survivor story for the first time publicly. And I guess what also makes me think of that is, telling that story publicly and saying I am a survivor of childhood and adult sexual assault, to say that for the first time to the world and to hear people behind me gasp. It's like, I guess it is, something I've been living with, but it is a big deal. But like I said, I think it's something that I just thought was so normal in my head because I've been living with it for so long and never talked about it. And it's not normal. But my uncle is someone that I also feel like I could talk to, and another person I miss every day very dearly. And yeah, I know I'm a spiritual person, and I believe that they're there behind the scenes. They're angels working and pulling strings and still looking out for us and the family. So yeah, I feel proud that I've used my voice and that my uncle got to hear that before he passed away.
Absolutely, and hearing you talk, it definitely makes you think, and it definitely brings, a face to numbers, but also much more than that, because far too often we hear about stories that go untold, and that go silent. And a lot of that, going back to, like coverage by mainstream media, oftentimes they don't cover stories like yours and like mine and so many others. And whenever they do, they paint us like we are a horrible person because we share something that's very deeply important for people to know about, right? And whenever we think about, who you are when as a independent artist and as somebody who has turned your rage into action, I think back to whenever we began organizing. You shared a post on October 17th of 2024, and it was in honor of Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And because of the pandemic, you were stuck living with an abusive partner. Could you walk us through that and how the pandemic impacted your life?
Yes, I think back to that time. I had not fully accepted what had happened to me. I had had, assault happen to me before this relationship. So I think I just like, how do I explain this? So I basically fell in love with someone who was an addict, and they were also a narcissist and were able to twist themselves and like show me a person in the beginning that wasn't really who they were, and someone who also had had abuse happen to them but hadn't dealt with it. So when the pandemic happened, me and this person were dating for like maybe 3 or 4 months. And, on my birthday, my 21st birthday, March 13th, March 13th, 2020, everything shut down. And at the time, he was living in New York City and I was living in Nashville. So we had this long distance relationship. And the pandemic changed everything. And I would never normally move in with someone this quickly, but because it was a pandemic, these were scary times, they were uncharted waters. He ended up moving to Nashville and we moved in together. And I'm not the only person that this happened to during the pandemic because everything changed. I'm not the only person that moved in with someone who ended up being an abusive partner. And when we moved in together, and I was one of the only people in Nashville still performing when things started to open up a little bit more. And at the time, I don't think he really saw how good or talented I was at my career in singing and songwriting, and how people gravitated towards me during shows and before, after shows, and just how strong my friendship group was here. And he got really jealous very easily, the attention I was getting. And I want to talk to you about this because at this point, my eating disorder was in full swing. I was exercising, basically binging and purging in the way that my purging was overexercising at least an hour a day. I was wearing a corset. So I would wear this corset and it would restrict myself. To the pl point where even if I was bleeding on my sides, I didn't care. Like, I would just keep tightening it and tightening it like a belt. And so, like, another way to like self-harm yourself, right? Because I was living with this person that had this very dark energy, and it became very dark. So I was like losing weight and he was gaining weight. But it was all very unhealthy and very toxic. And I mean, he was physical with me. He was very emotionally abusive. He made fun of my features. He made fun of, I mean, he just put me down all the time. And we talk about Linda Ronstadt. He was like, "Oh, you'll never be as good as her," and all these little things. And the very sad thing about the pandemic too is, so my dad in April 2020 got COVID and he almost died from COVID, and that was very traumatic because in the same month my grandma died from COVID and we weren't able to be with her. So my family took COVID very seriously because it's literally a disease that kills, right? And so I went a year living in Nashville, and my parents were in Atlanta at the time. I went a year without seeing my family. And that was Christmas too, because we were so careful about exposing each other to COVID. And my parents are older, and anyway, we just took it very seriously. So because I was isolated from my family, they couldn't see how bad the abuse was. And it got to a point where he was expecting me to clean the apartment or where we lived, just us. And he was very controlling. He wouldn't let me le close the door even when I was going to the bathroom. And there came a point where, he found out that I had had a relationship with another musician in the community way before I ever met him. And he blew up at me. And he got really abusive towards me. And I remember being like, okay, I gotta get out of here. And he was just yelling at me and berating me this one night. And all of a sudden, I was thinking of leaving. And he also knew of the assaults that had happened to me before, because I was honest with him about that. And he ended up, I said I didn't want to do anything that night, and he ended up raping me to keep me there and to control me. And I froze. And a lot of people that haven't been assaulted always ask survivors, "Well, why didn't you scream? Why didn't you run? Why didn't you fight back?" But my body was so disassociated at that point. I just laid there like a fish, or whatever you want to say. I was limp. And it was that freeze, the way the body protects itself when it has been assaulted, that happened to me. And I stayed with him for a while after that. And when I tried to address the issue, like I was like, "You did this to me." He completely gaslit me. And at one point he like shoved my face, so it's something that I'm still dealing with in all my therapy work, in my recovery work. But now I would not allow that behavior to ever happen to me. Because when you're abused, I think people are, like I said, they're always asking you, why didn't you leave? Why didn't you leave? And there's so much tie in you to this person, and you get so the, you know, oftentimes the abuser will isolate you to the point where, you know, you don't even want to leave the house. And I think at that point I was just leaving the house to like go, you know, I was dog walking at the time and I was doing shows, but he was always there. Like he was always next to me, you know, at shows. And yeah, it's just a very dark time. And so the my biggest regret though isn't even being with him. It's more the isolation I had from my family and that year or more time, you know, more than a year that I'll never get back, that time with my family. So now I feel like I cherish every minute with my family, and my partner, Marcus, who's so just wonderful and treats me the way I deserve to be treated. But you know, they always say you accept the love you think you deserve, and you know, I clearly, between, you know, not having dealt with what had happened to me in the past and my eating disorder coming out because of that and it just being in full swing, I really did not think well of myself. And I look back at pictures of myself and I'm just like, gosh, why did you think you were so unlovable? I look back at the work I was doing. You know, I deserve love. And that's really, I'm just so grateful to be a survivor and be on the other side of that. The other thing I'll say too, that really needs to change when it comes to how survivors are treated in Tennessee, you know, so after I broke up with this person, he was riding past my house every day. And he was riding his bicycle past my house every day, I should say. And he was finding me at gas stations. He was harassing me. And when my parents, you know, and came to help me, we called and asked, how do we get a restraining order against someone? And to get a restraining order in Tennessee, and I know it's not the only state where this happens, but you have to show up in court with your abuser there in person. You have to face your abuser again to get a restraining order. And it's like, why would I even want to do that as a survivor, as someone who is like, it's so fresh too. And this person is harassing me and putting things in my mailbox. And they're like, well, you can only get a restraining order otherwise, unless they come on, like the abuser comes on your property and, you know, threatens you or tries to like hurt you again. It's like, this person already raped me. He already like put his hands on me and abused me. And it's just like something else that, you know, fuels that drive in me to help survivors, because why is it so hard to get a restraining order? It's literally, there's so much stacked against survivors in this system. It makes me so angry, but also drives me to speak about this, because it shouldn't be this way. It really shouldn't be this way. So for any survivors out there listening, just know, again, you're not alone, and healing is possible. Re-empowering yourself is possible. I am an example of that. I am so grateful to still be here in this world, in this life, actually living in the present moment versus having this intense anxiety that I've always had my whole life. Whether it's living in the past or having fear of the future, fear of being hurt again, because, you know, being in these vulnerable situations where I didn't have control for whatever reason. Yeah, that's my domestic violence story. Unfortunately, as I said before, we know, for Rise Above Justice Movement, we know quite a few people that were stuck in abusive relationships during the pandemic, and I hope pe more people start speaking about that, because I think, unfortunately, it's more common than we think.
Absolutely. And you said a key thing. I think it's more common than people think. And that couldn't be any, closer to the absolute truth, because it's 100% true. And the pandemic, there was a very high increase in domestic violence and sexual assault and rape and sex trafficking and even like mental health and suicide, the numbers were off the rockers, right? And one of the last questions that I have for you, and then I'll turn it over to you to kind of give the world some more inspiration and share anything else that you would like the world to know. But you wrote a song, and it's off of your Not the Girl Next Door EP album, however. But the song is called The Next Lifetime. And I use this song a lot in a lot of posts that I do, which you already know. But one of the things that you, or some of the lyrics that you mention in it is call it bad luck, call it bad timing. If we were a poem boy, we wouldn't be rhyming. Maybe next time around, I'll see you again. We'll be better lovers, boy. We'll be better friends. What's the inspiration behind this? What does it stem from? And how do you feel about this song specifically? Because this is a lot of people's favorite song, next to obviously Barefoot and Pregnant. But this song has a very, very deep meaning behind it. Can you share that inspiration and the meaning behind it?
Yeah, I love this song too, and I hadn't listened to it in a while, and then I put it on the other day and I was like, oh, I was really feeling all the feels listening to it. And I wrote this originally as a breakup song, and it was about getting out of a toxic relationship, the things that we could have done differently, right, in a relationship. But also, when my aunt passed away in 2022, it became so much more than just a breakup song. It was about loss in general and all the people that, unfortunately we lose along the way that, my viewpoint of life is we're all connected and I'm a spiritual person and the next lifetime, yeah, I'll see you in the next lifetime. That is so me because that is really what I feel. Whether you believe in reincarnation or not, in one way or another, I feel like it gives me comfort and hope to know that I'll see someone or I'll see your soul again in some version or another. And I'm glad that it's become comforting for others as well, because there has been a lot of loss happening, as we know, in the world. And, unfortunately, we all will lose someone at one point or another. And I'm glad that this song has become sort of an anthem for, it's not goodbye forever. It's I'll see you again. So that's really the inspiration behind Next Lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, with my mom going through cervical cancer right now, obviously, we need all the hope that we can get. And, she's really excited about your new EP coming out in October.
I love that.
And she's deeply excited about the song Lighter. Can you walk us through the inspiration behind Lighter and what do you think is going to happen with the song once it's released? Which, coincidentally, that's when this podcast airs. It'll be on all of the main streaming platforms. And Gwen, your story is going to touch so many. And we have a global viewership, we have a global audience that's going to see this and to hear it. And what is the inspiration behind writing Lighter? And then I have one more question after this, and then feel free to share anything else that you would like to share.
Well, Lighter comes from, having this eating disorder effect that was caused by, the abuse that happened to me. But it doesn't just have to be about weight. The first lyrics are lost weight, gained weight. I just couldn't wait to get the weight off of my shoulders. And I feel like that's all of us right now. We're all looking to feel lighter during this time. This is a very heavy time. It's an unprecedented time. There's things that are happening that have not happened before in this country. And there's things that are happening in the world that are very upsetting and are very, very heavy. So I hope that this song helps give people levity, no matter what you've been through. I think we're all survivors, like I say, of what's happening right now. And the systems that have been put in place against us in many ways. And I think we will overcome. And writing the song gave me levity, and just helped me so much. And I just can't wait to share this with everybody. And the music video as well, I want to give a little tidbit. All of this comes out today, or I guess it did come out today, so it's very exciting. The music video is being premiered by the Bluegrass Situation, and if anyone knows The Office, Ed Helms helped create the Bluegrass Situation. So I'm glad that they really they premiered Barefoot and Pregnant as well, and they're fans, and that really helps just give me it gives me a lot of excitement to know that it's being received in a positive way. But the music video itself, I'm walking through this journey about myself. And for me, I've never wanted to show my arms or like a lot of my body in a music video. Like, I've always covered them. And this music video, I get to a river or this creek, this beautiful creek that we filmed the music video out in Ashland City, Tennessee. It was a beautiful day. And no one else was at this creek. It was just kind of like my own little private area. And I made the decision before getting into the water at the end of the video to take off my jacket and just feel free and feel lighter. And I get in the water, and I swear, when I got out of the water, it was such a spiritual experience for me. I felt like I was reborn. And this song makes me feel reborn. It makes me feel like I'm this like it re this empowered, strong goddess who's been through so much, but has also, because of my experiences, I'm able to talk about these things. And gosh, like, it's amazing to be on the other side. And that's really how I help people feel. And it's a really a survivor anthem. I'm so honored. Rise Above Justice Movement is going to, we're gonna we have a merch drop today as well with t-shirts, with quotes from the song, and just, if you want to wear it at a protest or just hanging around your house, just things that make people feel like they're seen and heard when for so long survivor voices have just been pushed to the side, as we always say. So I'm just really proud of the song. And Zachary, it makes me so happy and just like, gosh, I want to cry thinking about your mom listening to this song while going through cancer treatment. Because I wish my uncle had had it. And, there's so many other people out there that I really hope this song helps. And yeah, I just want it to again to be something that helps the world.
Absolutely. And we're going to blow lighter out of the water because it deserves it. You deserve it. Again, watching you grow over the last year has been one of the most rewarding experiences of my entire life. And I have to honestly say that I'm really excited to continue to see you grow, not only as an artist, but also as a person. And continue sharing your story in ways that a lot of people don't have the energy to do. And it's very real because of the fear of retaliation and the fear of losing your job, losing your health care. And oftentimes survivors are asked, well, what were you wearing? Or did you ask for it? Or was it legit? And the honest to God answer is it doesn't fucking matter. Because it doesn't. It does not matter what somebody's wearing. It does not matter, if they were intoxicated or if they were under the influence of any kind. It does not matter. You and I know that, and we do a fairly good job at educating, not only our followers, but on collaborative posts about why it's important from a survivor perspective to continue speaking out, as long as obviously there's consent involved. And I am deeply excited and honored to continue doing the work alongside you. And I want to tell you personally, thank you for coming onto the podcast. And thank you for sharing your story in a way that you haven't done before. Is there anything else you would like to share to anybody who's listening? Maybe a piece of advice, maybe a couple of resources that you want to list, or anything like that?
Yes, yeah, so before we close, I want to also say that Barefoot and Pregnant, the music video has been picked up by PBS. Originally, it was just going to air over in San Francisco, but now it is being broadcast nationwide, which is really exciting. Just check your local listing for the name Music California. That's the program it's going to be featured on. With that said, I also have a big EP release party planned at D's Lounge on October 28th. It's going to be a really fun night with a lot of special guests. So if you're in the Nashville area, please come out. Would love, love, love to see you and give you a hug, to meet you. Come grab some of this awesome new merch. The other thing, as we're talking about resources, I'm in Tennessee, so there's an amazing organization called Silent No Longer Tennessee, which does a lot of work with sexual assault survivors. Healthy Free Tennessee has done a lot to help women who are trying to get access to abortion care and other reproductive rights services that are not allowed to, not being allowed to happen here in Tennessee. So those are amazing resources, organizations. I really encourage people, survivors, if you're looking for a way to heal, and I know this is it's unfortunate, it's a privilege right now to be able to get therapy work, but check your if you have health insurance, check to see if you have any therapists in your network, because that therapy has changed my life. And there is a song on my new EP called Therapy, which is kind of in the same satirical vein as Barefoot and Pregnant. But I just really encourage everyone to look up mental health resources. And for me, personally, brain spotting has helped so much. If you can find a therapist that specializes in that, I highly recommend it. It's very intense, but what we went through is very intense, and we deserve to heal from these tremendous wounds that really affect us so much. And I think Silent No Longer Tennessee has some of those resources for anyone in Tennessee. And nationwide, I know there's a lot of different survivor networks that Rise Above Justice Movement we support, and we will be putting some of those on our website, so stay tuned for that. I'm deeply honored to be here and share my story. I really hope it helps those listening. And for those who are listening who are allies of survivors, thank you for being here. Thank you for giving your ears and your time to people that really just deserve to have their stories shared and listened to. And just to have the support of those who love them around them, it makes all the difference. Once I finally told my family my story, it just felt like it was very painful, but there's some sort of weight that just got lifted off me, just telling the truth and being honest about these things, right? Just thank you for having me, Zachary, and continuing to be part of this movement is so important to me. And everything is intertwined between my music and activism and the survivor movement we have happening right now. Just thank you for having me on board.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Gwen. And you can hear more from Gwen in future episodes because she will be back. She is one of my co-founders. Again, this is Gwen Levy, Gwen Levy and the Breakdown, currently living in Nashville, Tennessee. So I am deeply excited to continue collaborating with you, and we have some very exciting things planned. So everybody who is listening, thank you so much for believing and listening and uplifting to survivors. And with that, have a great night and have a great day wherever you are in the world. And continue to subscribe, uplift, share our content. You can find Gwen on social media at Gwen Levy Music and Gwen Levy and the Breakdown.
Before we end our podcast today, I would like to play Gwen's new song called Lighter, which will be on her EP, which releases in later in October. This is Gwen Levy and the Breakdown Lighter.
Lighter. lost weight, gained weight. I just couldn't wait to get the weight off of my shoulders. The fear and the pain, the guilt and the shame, making me feel nothing but older. I've been through a long dark tunnel. I know I lost my way, but I'm on the other side and I'm doing all right. I'm a little bit lighter these days. Lighter, like a feather in the wind. Lighter, a little bit lighter these days. Lost time, gained time. I'm done wasting time, making up for lost time now. Through thick and thin, I'm happy in my own skin. I've turned the mirror back around. Been carrying a heavy burden, walking through the pouring rain. Now I'm on the sunny side, not a cloud in the sky. I'm a little bit lighter these days. Lighter, a feather.